So, Tom, my name's John, and let's see. Hey, yeah, there we go. Left to right, there's a list of everybody on the stage here, and Tom will be facilitating the introductions. I have an MDiv. My wife and I were in East Asia, and I'm with the Inner Image Family Medicine Residency. The key email, by the way, I don't know if you've noticed, but this building loves missions. It just doesn't love cell phone, Wi-Fi, and cell phone texting and things like that. So we are going to be taking, Tom's going to be looking for your questions by email. And so there's the email address, question@innisimage.org, and we encourage you to get on a Wi-Fi, because otherwise your email may never reach it to Tom until tomorrow. Okay. So I think that's my part here with what we're looking at. The session is being recorded, and it's also being broadcast virtually. And one of the reasons we don't have last names up on the slide, and we're not going to use last names, is because you may be going at some point in your life to a place where it's probably best that God knows you came to GMHC, but the local authorities don't. Okay. Well, Tom, back to you.
So, if you guys could each introduce yourselves and say just a couple sentences about who you are, what you do it, where you have done it. I was going to come to the story, but we can also do a story now, however you want.
My name is Joanna, super excited to be here. I am non-medical, as the slide shows. My husband is a surgeon. We moved to West Africa to Bongolo Hospital in 2006, and we lived there in the middle of the jungle for 10 years, raised our two little people at the time, who are now 21 and 19. Love missions, love to chat with anybody afterwards about getting plugged in short-term, long-term, and what that would look like.
Hi, I'm Doug. I'm a family physician, married to Ruth. I have two kids. Live in Milwaukee now, and served in Nepal for 4 years with PEAM, and have been back in the States now for about 10 years, and I split my time between clinical practice and urgent care and working for CMDA for the Center for Advancing Healthcare Missions. And I too love healthcare missions, so happy to chat.
Hi, I'm Beth Helen. I am an RN. I worked in critical care for 3 years before going overseas. I'm now with Frontiers. I lived in East Chad, which is next to Sudan, if you don't know where Chad is, for a year on a team doing community health and disciple making, and now I'm on home assignment and transitioning to a new team. So.
I'm Jeff. I'm a family physician, currently live in rural Colorado, working in a community health center. We lived in South Sudan and Uganda for 8 years, and we've been back for 5. We raised our 8 children there, my wife Elizabeth and our 21-year-old daughter are here today.
And I realized I should have introduced myself as something more than Tom and what it says on the screen, but my name is Tom. I have a wife, I have a son, and we live in the Southwest U.S. We are currently in process to get overseas, so in that first time to GMHC, second time to GMHC, I'm in the 5+, kind of throughout the medical training. And slowly getting from that minion's gaze look of what do I do and how do I get there to gradually getting set up with an agency, and next steps will be finding out where we get to go. So that's a little bit about me. You guys were each given a chance to think of a story to share, to kind of lead us off, if you guys wanted to kind of in the same order.
So when we first moved to the middle of the jungle with our two little kids, about 2 or 3 years in, I failed to say, by the way, that yes, we left Africa 7 years ago, but my husband took a new role overseeing the surgical training programs in Africa in 11 different countries. So he's back and forth to all these hospitals 7-8 times a year, and I'm now able to go with him because our kids are in college. So we go to Kenya, various places. And he goes all over Africa. So we're still very much in touch with mission hospitals, specifically Africa and surgery. So my story is a couple years into our time living there, our then field director, Al, said he was leaving. He was called to another country, and he was leaving our team. And I said, okay, Al, you've been with our team now for several years. You know us. You know the makeup of the people, the personalities, all of that. What's one bit of advice that you think our team needs? Because you're leaving us. You're moving to North Africa, and we're left here in the middle of the jungle. And he said, Joanna, you need to have more fun. So, in the more fun department, I brought my little noisemaker because I took that seriously, and it was in 2008 that I started the fun committee. And we can talk more about that, but you got to have fun. You can't just work, 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 and cry, 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 and all that. Fun is what it's all about.
I am in for the fun committee. That sounds awesome. I wish I had props. I don't. So thinking back to where a lot of you guys are and seeing where the hands went up, I just want to mention our call-in process and discerning that. And it was very much for us, the Lord really just revealed kind of one step ahead at a time. It felt like we were kind of in a dark stairwell, and you could put your foot up, but you weren't seeing two steps ahead. And it was a walk of obedience, taking each step, and there wasn't like a lightning bolt in the sky. It was initially for us a conversation with our missions pastor, and then kind of feeling out a few agencies who we seem to jive with in terms of what our theology is and approach to ministry that we felt fit who we were. And then a realization that we really wanted to go somewhere where our medical skills could allow us to serve people who didn't know Jesus and who other missionaries maybe had a hard time getting to. Just the discernment process, you may not see six steps ahead, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't take one. So.
Yeah, that's really good. I'm also down for the fun committee. I'm down for the fun committee too. You have to, where I lived in East Chad was not very comfortable to live, and if you didn't laugh at stuff, you would just die, I think, honestly. I wanted to share a little bit about kind of the discernment calling process too. When I was in college, I did like a 5-week study abroad in Morocco because I had felt God speaking to me and leading me to the French/Arabic/Muslim Africa part of the world, and I wanted to just spend some time in it and just see what it was like. So I did a French class and a class on Islam, and I stayed with a Moroccan family. And just the heaviness and the darkness of being there and looking around me and being able to see visible signs of lostness on people, women wearing the hijab and people doing prayers and things like that, and knowing that probably most of them have never heard the gospel, probably most of them don't even personally know a Christian. Throughout that time, I remember leading one night where I was just like, God, I'm ready. Like, I'm ready to just pour my life out for Muslims. And I was just like laying on my face on the floor, and I felt the Holy Spirit really strongly check me and be like, what? Is that what God asks of us to do? Is to like pour our lives out for this people group or this thing or like this profession? And I just felt like God was saying to me, I'm asking you to pour your life out for me. I'm not asking you to pour your life out for this passion or something. And God has led me and called me, I feel like, for a really long time to serve Muslims and to be a part of what he's doing and bringing them into the kingdom. But I think that's so important that we keep the main thing, which is the worship of Jesus, and know that we're pouring our lives out ultimately for him, even if the way that we do that is pouring our lives out for others. So, yeah.
I think I'd like to share a bit about guidance as well. We have always been involved in domestic missions and felt that we were happy doing that. And we, at one point in 2006, began praying, Lord, you have something else for us to do. And then it was a week later that my friend called and said, would you help us plan a hospital in South Sudan? So be careful what you pray. And for us, you know, I mean, I don't get visions like some people that I know, but he kind of hit us over the head with a hammer that way. And so that started this whole process. We did not feel called to international missions. We did not feel called to a specific people group, but particularly South Sudan. There was no, you know, warm fuzzies in our heart about going to that people group. And it's simply about obedience. Now, we had just bought a bigger house in the country. We were working in an underserved area in Colorado, and we said, this is impossible. We had, I think, seven children at that time. We said, Lord, this is not very efficient. You know, you could send other people for less money that are not encumbered with a big house. And I was in a medical practice where we were underserved. We were understaffed anyways. But none of it made sense. And we eventually hooked up with Pioneers. One of the things that they had us do was form a prayer advisory committee. And so a group of people from our church, the most faithful ones in our home church, little country church, gathered with us and met with us about every month for a couple of years and prayed and talked through the things. None of us really felt like the Lord was actually going to get us onto the mission field. It took about 3.5 years. The housing market had just crashed, so we put our house back on the market almost after we bought it, and our realtor thought we were crazy. And it took several years, but finally the Lord moved those things, and there were plateaus along the way. We were just like, Lord, was this for real, or, you know, were we just making this up? And then he would push us to make a tangible step forward. Like, I quit my job and took a different one, which allowed us to actually go in. And each time we did that, we saw him meet and confirm, provide what we needed. We were never comfortable. Like, yeah, we got this sewn up. And in fact, I think I paid off our last student debt as we drove to the airport to move with our family. So that's how our story started.
Thank you all for sharing. Lots of good wisdom. So I started with a couple polls, maybe one last poll. Out of the kind of big issues to fry, I'm just kind of curious what are maybe more the things that you're most interested in hearing us start off with. So whether it's an issue of how do I sense God's guidance? How do I raise funds? Do I need to raise funds? Should I be a tent maker? Mission agencies, yes, no, which one, how? Going to the mission field as a single person. Going to the mission field as a family, each have their own issues. So kind of between those five, I'm going to give you a chance to raise your hand just once. And just so we can kind of see where we want to start off our discussion, and then we'll go from there. And keep in the back of your mind, start sending some questions. If I don't get your questions, you're going to end up with all the questions that I have. So start thinking about some questions to share as well. So can I see a show of hands if you're most interested in hearing, how do I sense God's guidance? Okay. How do I raise funds or support myself through this crazy adventure? Okay. Missions agencies, yes, no, which one, how? Okay. The first time I went to GMHC, I was single, and so when I would have asked this question, I would have been looking around. But going to the mission field as a single person. Okay, thank you for your bravery after I just shared that. And then going to the mission field as a family. Okay. It seemed like, actually, missions agencies. I was kind of surprised.
And that was the one you thought of. Yeah, good job, brother.
Who knew? So, just kind of starting, some of you guys shared what agencies you went with. Why in the world do missionaries join missionary agencies? Or why do people serve independent from an agency? Just kind of a broad overview to start us off.
So I'll start. I now have a new role in our church part-time working as a missions director, and this has been something that I've explored. Obviously, we have our own personal experience with sending organizations, but I now am getting paid to do more research into these different organizations. And We went with the Christian Missionary Alliance, which, if you've heard of them, is more of a church planting organization. They accepted us, and they have three different alliance hospitals in Africa. And it was great. My thought regarding why go with any organization at all, there's a lot that you know already, but there's a lot that you don't know as well. And we're all in this posture of constant learning, constant, oh, I had no idea. And even walking around the booths here today, wow, okay, so tell me about your organization. What do you do? What do you not do? I call them service agencies, service organizations, the ones that will accept you almost no matter what. You say your name, you give them your email, and you say what country you want to serve in. Those are like the slim and trim version that will get you there, but there's not a depth and or support behind that. So the kind of other variety is more the full service agency that would be a sending organization that would then include things like life insurance and retirement and how does all, because it's great that all of you want to go and serve full time in missions, but the idea of what happens 5 years down the road, 10 years down the road, if and when the Lord calls you to another place, calls you to another sending organization, your team switches, your country switches, all of that, then you need probably a retirement plan and a few other things to kind of give you some depth and really support you in life long term. Does that make sense? So there's a million great agencies that are here and that are willing to send you. I would just strongly advise, when you're doing research, ask what they're providing for you and what they're not providing for you so that you can get the best equipping possible for a godly success story in the long run.
I'll just chime in. There's different roles that sending agencies play and supporting churches play, and you kind of figure those out when you're on the field, honestly. At least we did. So how many of you have heard of member care? Is that something? So member care is a really important component of what sending agencies provide. And it's kind of behind the scenes support to help you thrive as a missionary. And there are streams outside of a sending agency that can provide member care, but that's a really important piece of it. Some of it is just, again, kind of the feel that you need to have conversations at places like GMHC with them to see if it kind of jives with who you are. The sending agency, there's a temptation to say, man, that you're taking 12% of what I'm raising for what? But there is an important role. There's a reason they've stuck around.
Thank you, guys.
Can I add one more? So I would also say the longer the application and the longer the process, likely the healthier and stronger you will be, and you will be strengthened during all of your time overseas as well.
Next question is kind of a broad one. In our contemporary geopolitical climate, is it realistic to consider a lifelong assignment in medical missions? There's definite benefit in terms of language mastery, cultural mastery, and I think many of us might envision that, but is that realistic?
Yes. I don't know. For us, it was 8 years. I think in our years, we've seen people that overstayed their call, and some people that maybe left before they really stuck it out to see what the Lord was up to in that place. So I think, yes, I think it's highly personalized and depends on your family circumstance. We have teammates that we started with 12 years ago that are still there. They shifted location because of war, but they're still doing that, and I believe they, several of them will be there for their lives. That was not our calling, but we now, our calling has shifted to being more supportive. So I think yes, but maybe not.
Yeah, I went to Chad thinking I was going to be there for a long time, and I was only there a year because my team left. And most missionaries that I know that have been on the field for multiple decades have lived in sometimes several countries. And I know there are people who go and live in one country for 15 years, but that doesn't happen a lot of the times. And especially in the Muslim world, and in countries that probably have the most need, they're probably the countries you're going to most likely have to leave before you wanted to leave, or before you thought you were going to leave, or anything like that. But that doesn't mean that you throw in the towel and go home unless God is asking you to go home. There's always more. There's always needed another place. So. Just because of some event or personal illness or something like that, you end up not being able to go to the country that you always thought you were going to go to, or you didn't get to stay as long as you thought you were going to stay, God is not done in your life, and there's always more need and more people.
Yeah. This is a twofer question, and feel free to choose question A or question B. How do we discern if one spouse has felt a new call and the other spouse isn't quite as drawn to that same place yet? And how do you discern different roles in a family living overseas? They're single questions.
I think you determined which of you is more spiritual.
And then go with the other person.
You listen to your wife. Have really strong leading from the Lord. So that's maybe a little bit of a flip answer, but I think we need to seek the Lord together, and I think it should be a unanimous decision. And if you're not unanimous, then you keep seeking the Lord.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that. I think this question has everything to do with living overseas, but also nothing to do with living overseas, because in my opinion, the marriage and the roles have to be decided no matter where you live in life. If you're both medical and considering a place, it would make a lot of sense that there would be a place and a role for you to professionally engage. Which, if you have children or hope to have children, then the question is, okay, if you're both working full-time at the hospital, what are you going to do with kids? Which, that's a question here stateside as well. So these are great, great questions. We've seen and unfortunately talked to lots of medical missionaries who maybe the one is a doctor, surgeon, nurse, and the other is non-medical. And if that's you and your situation, that's challenging, and only God can support specifically, I'll say, the non-medical spouse, which in my case was and is me. But my husband, he is a surgeon, and so literally day two or three after moving to the middle of the jungle, he was off in the OR, which was great, and he was doing his thing, which was great, and that's why we were there. And so then I was with the kids, which also was great. That was my role. That's what we decided, determined, prayed about. That's where the Lord brought us. Was it easy? No. For me, it was a little bit like the COVID quarantine without sounding too of a like devastating situation. But the whole isolation for me in the middle of the jungle as the only non-medical spouse that's there with the only two kids that are English-speaking, pretty much for the whole 10 years. Super challenging, a little bit like the isolation that we've all been through. And yes, there were people, but it's hard. It's really hard. So praying, and the unanimous, I would say, you absolutely have to be on the same page. Otherwise, that's kind of the beginning of disaster.
Wholeheartedly agree. The Holy Spirit is an amazing, amazing connector and driver. Yeah. And maybe I'm not a panelist, but I might also have a call to husbands. We are called to be like Christ for our wives and to die for our wives. That's my off my soapbox. I'm back to being a moderator. I'm sorry. Are there means to have basic living expenses covered working as a professional, doctor, nurse, otherwise, versus support raising? So broad speaking about funding, and I can say that I've gone through this journey of initially thinking that I would be a supported medical worker working in a traditional mission hospital, and then, oh no, well, I will only go as a tent maker, and now still to be determined. There's multiple options, advantages, disadvantages, options.
So the tent making opportunities are certainly more narrow in terms of being a... Tent making, yes. Good question.
Thank you for not emailing that one. That was appropriate.
If we say any acronyms up here, too, that are not understood, let us know. Thank you. Tent making, basically drawing your salary from where you're working. And so you're not having to have people financially support you from back here in order to work somewhere else.
And it comes from the Apostle Paul in the New Testament.
Paul, where he was making tents. In order to support himself. So, yes, tent-making opportunities are going to be more few and far between. They are out there, you know, and they're going to be typically kind of not as common in majority world, right? Middle East, certain places in Asia, academic appointments, things like that. You may find opportunities to be working in... there are a few mission hospitals where you could draw a salary, but often it'll be in like a secular institution and you are salt and light there, living intentionally. And then, yeah, so most opportunities are going to be drawing support. Now, there are opportunities to, like, the post-residency program is one thing to highlight with Samaritan's Purse for those of you who are going the medical or dental route. Where for the first couple of years after you complete your training or early on in your career, they will provide your funding for your ministry, and you don't need to raise support. You still can, but and so that's kind of an on-ramp. But thereafter, most people who want to stay would then eventually raise support. So.
Yeah, so I think it largely depends on the economy of your host culture. So for us in South Sudan, there was no hope of that. Going to the Middle East, being an employee physician or nurse, there's many job opportunities. You know, the last GMHC, hearing about those really appealed to me. Having lived on support for many years, I think there's advantages and disadvantages to each way.
But I would just add, don't let your fear of raising support be what makes that decision, because the process of support raising and building your team is one of the most encouraging and enabling processes that you will go through. And even for those who are out in a tent-making capacity, that is still a critical component of getting from point A to point B, is having a support team back here.
How do you manage family and friends here in the States concerned for your safety? Especially, this question said, especially as a single person, both as a family, but especially as a single person. How do you manage people here in the States concerned for your safety?
It's a great question. It's dangerous to live anywhere in the world these days. Living overseas in a foreign country is definitely dangerous, and I would say on the how do you handle that, handle it with care and let the Holy Spirit guide you. Our pastor has often said we want to dial up turn up the volume of those godly, wise, mentor, cheerleader, encourager people in our lives, and we want to turn down the volume of those who maybe are lovely, fantastic Christian family members, extended family members, friends that we've been in small group with forever. If there's this negative, what about this? What about this? Isn't it dangerous? Isn't it scary? Yes, that's the reality of what you're about to embark on. So I think people ask us all the time, what about the snakes? What about the spiders? What about the ants? I don't like any of that. I say, I don't like it either, but you can do that. So is it dangerous? Absolutely. And I think if, as a single person, going into the mindset of, okay, we need to be smart, and if you're married with or without kids, you have to be smart and wise, and don't go out and do something foolish in a foreign country thinking that you're running around Louisville and that it's safe. I mean, again, it's not super safe in Louisville, but it's definitely not safe in some foreign countries, especially if you're not 100% fluent in the country and language and culture and all of that. Don't do things by yourself. As a married woman, I didn't do things by myself because it just wasn't safe, even in our little jungle village of La Bamba. So be smart in who you listen to and turn up the volume of those that are cheering for you and that are also godly, wise people, and turn down the volume of those that are saying, why are you staying in the middle of the jungle? Couldn't you do better making money here as a surgeon and sending the money overseas? No, God called us there, so we went.
Yeah, I think there will be people who just can't understand, especially people who aren't believers, and sometimes some believers can't understand, but maybe you can be a part of helping them make it a little bit harder. I'm sure that you probably all have heard that nice little saying that the safest place for you to be is in the center of God's will, and it's really not true. It's true in the fact that God is sovereign, and he's not going to let anything that happens to you, God has authority over that. But there could be somebody in this room who dies for their faith. Just because you're in the center of God's will doesn't mean that something terrible won't happen to you. So a lot of, I mean, people say that to me all the time. And they don't mean what I just said. They mean, this is hard for me to comprehend, and I just need to say something to, like, I don't know, maybe not have to acknowledge the reality. But, yeah, the reality is that there are places that are dangerous, and there are lots of things that can happen to you that are much more likely to happen to you in other places. I had, like, in Chad, I woke up one night and there was a man in my room. Thankfully, he immediately left, and, like, I wasn't harmed or touched. He didn't steal anything. That would not have happened to me in the States. That happens to other people in the States, but in my life, that really probably wouldn't have ever happened. But it's, you know, like, we're not asked to live these safe, nice lives when anything bad happens to us. And also, I think part of people not understanding, too, is, yes, bad things happen in countries, and there are really unstable places and physically unsafe places to be, but sometimes people just have a really, like, an idea about the safety of a place that's really blown out of proportion. Like, in their minds, Christians are being kidnapped left and right, and, like, somebody's going to put a gun to my head in Chad, and people have been kidnapped in the past in Chad, but that was not the state of the country when I was there. And so sometimes it just looks like explaining to people, like, yeah, there are heightened risks and there are these things that happen, but actually Egyptians aren't just running around stoning Americans. So So sometimes you just have to clear up misconceptions.
Jumping back to mission agencies, so we talked advantages, disadvantages, why somebody might, if somebody does choose to work with an agency, you go to the exhibit hall, there are 15, give or take a few, probably more. How do you choose which one?
Yeah, I think I applied with another agency before I went with Frontiers, and I spent over a year in the application process of that organization and was like, had the green light. I could have gone, but God redirected me through some different ways. And I think my biggest takeaway from like really being really deep in the process with two organizations that are both good orgs is that every organization has pros and cons. They all have their different personalities in the way that they work, and we all have our own personalities and ways that we work and we thrive better. And so you need to get to know the organizations and figure out what are the pros and what are the cons, and try to sit down with people in them who will honestly tell you what they don't like about the organization and what they love. And then just kind of figure out, like, okay, would I rather, this is just an example, in Frontiers there's not a ton of medical screening, like when people go out, and a lot of us really like that because that means we have freedom to choose. But other organizations, they have a lot heavier medical screening, and there are probably a lot more restrictions on where certain people can live, but there's a lot better, like, medical input into your life and support. So there's just, you have to weigh the pros and the cons.
Yeah, I think starting with certain questions that would pretty easily filter certain orgs in or out is a reasonable starting place. Like if you feel called to a certain part of the world or a certain people group, or depending what your field is, do you want to work on a larger team? Do you want to work in an academic setting? Do you want more of a church planning or community health emphasis, or do you want to be doing more clinical care? And those are questions that can start to reduce the field down to a more manageable number pretty quickly. I think once you get further down the line, talking with people who are out there serving and having honest and frank conversations about the goods and the bads is really helpful. There are some kind of rubrics or filters that you can push things through and get it down to a more manageable number.
What are the benefits of pretty much going as soon as you can straight out of training, get there fresh on the field, versus waiting until you've had a little more U.S. or other kind of Western medical experience?
I think if you come right out of training, you may not have the experience. I don't know about for others, but my first 1 or 2 years out of residency, I was still figuring things out. I was still developing my algorithms. I was growing in my understanding of medicine. I did not feel ready to go and teach or practice internationally at that point. So I think part of it is maybe where your call is, and also your preparation and your feeling of comfortability. We went when we were 39 years old, been out in practice for about 9 years, and I think our calling was to actually start a mission hospital. And had I not had those 9 years of experience, both being a medical director in the U.S. and practicing for a while, I would not have been able to do that. But if you're going into an established work, it's very feasible to come right out of residency.
I'll be brief since I answered the last one too, but I would say my observation is the longer you wait to go, the less likely it becomes that you're actually going to go. And so, and that can have something to do with like a cooling of your call, but it can just have to do with life circumstances too. In my life, 4 years after we left for the field, my wife was diagnosed with stage 4 endometrial cancer. She's still alive now, thank the Lord. But had we waited for a few years, we would have never gone. And we were firmly convicted that we were supposed to go. So life can happen, calling can cool. That's not to say that everyone should get a plane ticket the day they finish their training, but I'd say err on the side of going.
I'll just add super quickly, for nurses, my experience is that you learn how to be a nurse in your first job, not in nursing school. So just keep that in mind.
Doug, kind of piggybacking on your story, how difficult was it, and maybe even Jeff, you might be able to speak of it, because 9 years after training, How difficult was it to give up your life plan in the U.S. or kind of give up what we can sometimes get comfortable into to go overseas?
Well, one of the things is don't be in love with your employer. You know? So, I mean, I've worked for a federally qualified community health center, and it was not hard to leave. But actually, I'm back working for them again, so I can't be off with that. But it has to do, I think, with your calling, and so if. Repeat the question again.
How difficult was it to give up your life and kind of Western comfort?
I mean, I think it's staying close to Jesus, and if He calls you there, it may not be the safest place to be in God's will, but it really is the richest and best place to be in His will. And so for us, I mean, we actually, you know, had a pretty nice house, and we were established, and we said, Lord, do you have something else for us? And then that radical change happened, and it was difficult and exciting and enriching and hard, all mixed up. But had we just kind of stayed, as the speaker this morning said, stayed in the airplane, I think it would have been really dull and not what He had for us. So it's rich to follow Him. And so we were actually excited to sell our house and downsize and be crazy and weird.
So, for me personally, it was super hard. We did not have missions on our radar and never thought that we would be overseas living in Africa. So when my husband was a fourth-year general surgery resident was when we got the call. Through an email from CMDA that they were needing a surgeon to fill in for Dave Thompson, who's the closing speaker, the plenary speaker, tomorrow. So Dave was coming back on furlough, and they needed somebody for a year. As I already said in the beginning, we ended up going there for 10 years. But that initial, okay, is this what you have for us? Because I'll just be honest, in my Western comfort, American mindset, I had this dream of my husband would stay working at Fairview Hospital in Cleveland, Ohio, and we would buy this lovely house right around the corner, and he would be, you know, 2 minutes away from the hospital, and we would have our 2.5 kids, and life would be just perfect. Though we love missions, we love the Lord, and obviously that email kind of changed our whole trajectory. But it was hard. It was very, very hard. We did not attend GMHC when my husband was in medical school or even in residency. So this was not a 5-year plan, 10-year plan. This was not on our radar. And I see some of you are not 20 years old, so perhaps you're like us. We moved when we were 31. That's a big shift, a big change. And yet as hard as it was the best thing ever, and God used all of that and all the tears. Maybe I'm the only one who had some tears along the way, but for His glory, and it revolutionized our life and transformed us, and we still love medical missions through the hard, which I think that I'll just say one more time, it is hard to do what you're about to do. If you think it's just going to be fun and exciting and like, no, it's hard. Kind of a downer, but it's true.
Thank you for the real life answer. Particular recommendations about language acquisition. Do it before you get to the field. Do it at France, then go to Morocco. Do it at don't worry about it. Recommendations.
So this is one of the filters that you should view as you're choosing a sending agency, how much they emphasize language and how much of a priority that is for you. So I think another question that you need to ask is how long are you planning to spend? Because if you are planning to spend 5 to 10 years somewhere, then spending a year in language is not unreasonable. Whereas if you're only going to be there for 2 years, spending 2 or 3 months is probably more of an appropriate approach. But I think language is important, and so putting significant effort into it is important. It's certainly much easier to learn if you are immersed in it. So realistically, being in country or somewhere where that language is spoken and you're not going to have the luxury of falling back on English as much will help you acquire it more quickly. But do make it a priority and don't say, I think I'm going to go into clinic today or do this, because that's the easy way to go. You'll want to do that, but emphasizing language in order to be able to communicate in hard language is really important.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree. Language learning is essential. It's a part of loving the people. You know, learn their language is offensive to that people. So, and we ended up trying to learn while we were in our setting, and that's very difficult. I really wish we could have had some pre-field time to learn it separate, because yes, when you get there, the needs draw you, and people even make you feel guilty about learning the language, because, well, the needs are so great in the hospital. So I would strongly encourage you, if you're able to, find an agency that supports that. And ours did, but the setting we were going to didn't happen.
So we moved to France for language school. We were in Albertville, France, in the Alps, which sounds dreamy. And it was hard. Back to that hard word. Sorry, that's just the reality. And it was... Well, I... But it was hard. And moving... So my husband, who is medical, says language school was actually harder than medical school. Because it is a constant, French was everywhere. He couldn't escape it and go to the grocery, like shopping, church, everything was in French. And it was overwhelming for us. It was super hard on our marriage, super hard on our kids, super hard on everything. So it was hard. We lived there for 7 months and super grateful that we learned what we did. Because otherwise, me, that non-medical wife, would have been even more isolated, trapped in little house four, saying, okay, I can't talk to anybody except for the kids, the ants, and the spiders. I need French to be able to have these interactions and to try to make some friends.
Well, hold onto your seat. There's more coming. More questions, more answers right here. And then we'll also be doing small groups in a few minutes. But I've got a few things to share. It's a little bit of a halftime interlude. Two of our panelists are doing workshops this afternoon, and so Beth Ellen and her former team leader are doing the one on evidence-based practices for healthcare missions to Muslims. And then Jeff and his wife, Elizabeth, are doing the mess and mystery of missions. And so they're doing that session. Both of those are offered twice. And Jeff wrote a book with that same title, too, so you can catch that at some point. So let's see. So we're going to cover a lot more questions, and we're going to have small groups, but there's more answers out there. Over about 15 years, I've collected about 100 questions from you and people previous years, and it's all published online at askamissionary.com, and most questions have 3 to 5 answers. And so I know it's a really hard website to remember, askamissionary.com. So I'm hopeful about that, okay? So we've got that. And then, so lots of answers. And then, see, GMHC is really big, and there's so much going on, and maybe it's a little overwhelming. What if you could go to a gathering with just a few hundred people? And so there is one of those coming up. So Priority 15 is an annual gathering to pray and strategically launch professionals to unreached people groups, whether it's a professional that's in healthcare or accounting or business or engineering. And so you can get an invitation. I don't know if the QR code will work for you, but you can type in. It's priority15.org. And if you do /invite, it gets you some information right away. And so there's the gathering. And let's see, Tom, you haven't been able to come to the gathering yet, but you've got in front of you a sheet of paper, right?
Okay. I do.
So can you read what somebody said after they went to their first gathering?
I have been asking God about career, regions, and how best to prepare. The Lord gave me insights into next steps via one-on-one conversations.
So lots of one-on-one conversations there. And then what did somebody write like a few years later after they'd been to a gathering? A different person.
We are now in one of the 15 areas because of connections made at one gathering and then encouragement from the gathering the following year.
And so it's an annual gathering. It rotates different cities. This coming year, it will be in Tulsa the end of February, Friday night through Sunday morning. One of the other people that's been to Priority 15, he's forming a team to reach out to unreached people groups, and he's doing a lunch today in FH 109, and that's one of the special meetings. That one didn't make it into Elements, but it is online, so that's FH 109. So, okay, so that slide is up. So, the Priority 15 has an annual gathering. And what else does Priority 15 have, Tom?
So, Priority 15, we actually got introduced to Priority 15 at GMHC last year, my wife and I. And Priority 15 has, there's multiple aspects. There's the annual gathering. There's weekly prayer meetings to pray for an unreached people group, the 15 different unreached people groups that are kind of decided as priorities. Each week by week, you pray for one of these unreached people groups. And this has been just such a life-giving and centering part of our family's continued focus on missions. You know, you're here at GMHC, and everything's wonderful. You're up high on the mountain. And then comes Thanksgiving, and then comes Christmas, and then you know, you're studying for exams or you're in your practice and life goes on. But this is a week in, week out rhythm for us of, okay, God wants us to remember his heart for the unreached and to pray for them and to actually accomplish things in the world through our prayers. So it's been an amazing, amazing thing. There's multiple days. You're busy on Sunday. Great. Do it Tuesday. You're busy on Tuesday. Great, do it Saturday. Multiple days, multiple times weekly. There's a lot of grace because most of us are in school or some aspect of medicine or busy with family, and you can't make 100%. Nobody's taking attendance. Join as often as you can. There's a lot of grace whether you are out walking or whether we are, one of us is putting the toddler to bed and the other is like making food while also zooming into this prayer meeting. Yeah, this has just been such a life-giving thing for us and the community that we've found. I cannot encourage you enough to join this. So
that's the prayer groups.
That's the prayer group.
And if you go to this website, you can get information about the prayer groups as well, priority15.org/invite. What else do you do?
Well, the last thing, that is for anybody with a heart for missions or the unreached. Anybody. You could say, I am never leaving the United States, but God has my heart, trying to follow his heart for the unreached, pray weekly. Great. But then if you are on the path that sometime in the next 2 to 5 years, you're anticipating going as medium to long-term sort of missions, then there's a goer cohort. So this is a cohort of people that are on a similar trajectory. These are peers. You know, if you're going with a mission org, there are mentors and there are people that will kind of help you through that process. But these are peers that are walking with you at a similar pace as you are. So this is, there's, I think, do you have an, the
I do,
next?
I do have a slide on that, yeah. And so there's a lot of stuff there.
All right. So this, so the weekly prayer groups are just literally for anybody. The goer cohort, this is for people that are actively on the path that sometime in the next 2 to 5 years, I expect to be overseas. And it's bi-monthly, and there's a chance to pray together, get to know each other, talk through, okay, where are you at getting this next step done? Where are you at getting this next step done? Where are you at this next step? And so we all kind of hold each other accountable, judgment-free, but like, hey, let's all encourage each other towards continuing to move forward. And then we hear from current missionaries. If you have ever done the application process, earlier it was mentioned that like the longer the process and the more in-depth you're having to go to, like the better fit it is. It's a long process. There's psychological assessments. There's doctrinal assessments. Like it takes weeks to months to do that. And hearing from the missionaries is a way to kind of reground that this is just a logistics slog. And this feels like I'm not actually going to the mission field. This reconnects that logistics work to, okay, this is why we're doing this. This is what God is doing overseas.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brother Tom, and you can get information about that as well, going to priority15.org/invite. So hopefully most of you got one of these sheets when you came in. If you did not, could you raise your hand, because we want everyone to have one of these evaluations. So we've got Kelly and Rosie are going to be passing it. You could keep your hand raised until you get one of these sheets here. And wanted to let you know about that. And we're going to be talking real in a minute here about the small groups that we're going to. And let me read you a couple of quotes from people who have gone to the small groups in the past. My group leader was great and answered a lot of questions that I had. My leader did a great job being open and honest about her experiences. And so the groups will be about 3, 5, 10 people. And then the leaders wrote about their groups. This was very helpful to move forward in things in people's lives. And then another person quoted someone in the group, said, my group said it was the best part of GMHC, talking about real life things. And so that's about what we're going to talk to here. And so let's see. If you look at the evaluation form, one side of it has a nice green picture with a question mark, right? And so that's the evaluation form. The very top question is, you want to write something about the first hour here that we've been together. But then the number two, don't fill this out yet, because you're going to go to the second hour and go to a small group. So hold on to that. And then and at the bottom of that page, you can see that when you're done, you'll leave this face down in the center of your discussion table. So that kind of leads to the question about, let's see, where's my discussion table, right? Okay. So I've got, let's see, where's my deal? Here we go. Here's our main slide. And it's on the back of your evaluation form, right? So we're going to have 8 different kinds of groups, some for singles, some for nursing, some for couples with kids, without kids, couple with healthcare. So a variety of different options here. And you can pick whichever door you want to go to. And so you could be a couple that's married or engaged or seriously dating. We're not going to ask you which kind you are. You could be 2 married nurses, and you could go to the nursing. You could do couple with kids. Just a lot of possibilities. And some of these say, like the first two, talk about single heading and single exploring. And the idea there is, if you feel like you're seriously heading towards full-time missions, go to that group. If you're like, I'm exploring, I'm not sure I want to be in the group with these other people that have the more intense questions. Okay, so you can go to heading or exploring, either section. And so you'll be going, not right now, but you'll be going to one of these rooms, and you can see the little map on the back of your sheet here. You'll go around the chapel, so when you'll be, Tom will tell you which door to go out. And then you'll go to one of the doors, 200, 202, 207, 209, and the doors also have A or B on it, so you can see which door to go to, and that's how you'll get in the right group. And some of the doors will take you into one of 2 groups, others one may be one of 4 groups, so we're going to try to evenly distribute the groups the best we can. So that's that piece there. Anything I should make more, explain better on that? And then at the bottom of the page, and you can do this now or later, you can take a picture on your phone for use later. I picked out 5 of the best audio breakouts on topics related to going to full-time. And then also a little reminder about Priority 15 there at the bottom there. So I think I'm getting close to handing the mic back. So if you're one of the coaches that's leading one of the groups that we've been emailing back and forth, you're going to follow me and Kelly to room ATCR 207, and everybody else stays, and panelists, you guys will be staying right now for a few more answers. But when you do leave, you'll take your white sheet, and that'll tell you which room to go to. Okay, and that also will be your way to get in the door. Everybody else, when you go in the door, you'll get one of the slips to tell you which table to go to. It's on that sheet. Doug will show you. Okay, so back to Tom. I'll hand the mic.
Thank you. All right. I've gotten a number of questions kind of on a similar topic. The balance of what do you do evangelism medicine, what do you do with the balance of your time? And also, how do you protect not just the balance of gospel medicine, but also how do you protect yourself in areas with huge needs? How do you protect yourself from not working 80 hours, 160 hours a week? Ridiculous numbers. Like, how do you protect yourself from burnout? Somebody commented that MedSend said that overwork is one of the biggest reasons why missionaries leave the field. How do you balance between 100 patients a day and sharing the gospel and turning people? How do you balance gospel medicine, and how do you protect with some boundaries?
So this is coming from my husband, surgeon. He was just in the back, but he's one of the panel or one of the speaker people, so he left to get ready at the table. He would say that protecting your well-being for the next day, the next week, the next month, is super important. When we joined the Bungalow Hospital team, the culture there was set up so that we knew there were some boundaries, and we never had a patient knock on our door. We have lots of other stories about, like, a drunk man coming to our house and playing basketball in our carport thing at 4 a.m., which woke us up, startled us. He was thinking we killed his mom. But we had boundaries within the medical community, and that was a beautiful thing. Did my husband have to leave the hospital to, you know, have dinner with us when he could and all that? Absolutely. You want the long view in mind, and if you go to any hospital, specifically in, well, any country, any place, the demand is great and the needs are great, but to protect your personal health and your family, your marriage, your future family, it's huge. And to keep you overseas, if that is your goal, keep that long view in mind, and the patient might die, which is horrible, and nobody wants that. But if you leave, all of these patients will die because your skill will not be there 2 months from now or 20 years from now.
Yeah, I think it depends on what your main kind of drive is going overseas. Like, is your main drive, I want to practice medicine, I want to be a nurse in the name of Jesus, and I want to share when I have opportunity. That's totally valid, and God calls a lot of people to do that. God also asks some of us to be much more heavily focused on making disciples and spending long hours sitting face-to-face with people with nothing to do with medicine. And so it just kind of depends. Like, what is God put on your heart? What is he asking you to do? And there might be seasons where that looks differently, where more of your time looks like medicine, or maybe seasons where hardly any of your time looks like medicine. It just depends on what your role is and who you're going with and what you're going to do. My team leader is a general surgeon. I'm an ICU nurse. Jason, my team leader, like, didn't really do a lot of surgeries, stitched up an occasional head and focused mostly on community health education. I tested some people for malaria and told them which one of the 10 prescriptions they actually needed, and mostly learned language because we were looking towards community health focus, because that's what our team felt like God had led us to do, that would let us spend more time making disciples. But it just depends. It's something that everybody kind of has to discern, and it might look different at different times.
I would say it depends also on your platform, like, what's the reason you're in the country. You may need to legitimize the fact that you're there. And if you're being paid, obviously, by a secular organization to be there, you have to focus on that work that they've asked you to do. That's important. And then the other aspect is team. For us, yeah, we could just have been swallowed by the medical work. And the only way to prevent that was to develop a team. We actually had to build a team and from scratch, and then really build in cycles of rest for our personal restoration, and also to integrate evangelism. And then also the team, the fact that in our setting, we had chaplains who were speaking in their mother tongues, tribal languages, that really were able to go deeper. We were just kind of gotten in the door, if you will.
We are starting to get to the last few minutes, and there are some really good questions, and I apologize that we are not going to get to all of them, which is why John referred you to askamissionary.com, which has even more questions than were asked today. And a lot of the questions are particularly some questions about kind of how to pray through next steps. Join one of the prayer meetings. Like, just continue to be in prayer. Join one of the goer cohorts so you can be continuing to be in community. I can't emphasize those things enough. Some of the other resources that were discussed, strongly recommend. I think maybe this might be a quick question to kind of direct people to next steps rather than answering everything about it. Initially I asked doctors, nurses, students. I didn't ask about PAs, NPs, social work, dietitian, so many of the other things that are super valuable, but are maybe less heavily advertised. How would you direct somebody to finding out where, finding out what, which orgs, just kind of a quick suggestion.
I think that medicalmissions.com has actually redone their labels for sending orgs, so it should be more sortable. But that's 100%, the whole healthcare team is needed. Like, we don't, like, if Kier goes to his hospital in Cleveland and says, I'm a surgeon, I'm going to do an operation today, and doesn't have a whole team, good luck, you know? And the same thing is true in a mission hospital or clinic. So we need the whole team. There was an ultrasonographer in our recent pre-field orientation for new healthcare missionaries. When you talk about a useful and needed skill that is not advertised, if you're an ultrasonographer, there are like 50 mission agencies downstairs that would sign you up today and probably let you skip language, but but don't. Ask, do you have people in your agency doing these things? What would the opportunities be? So absolutely, the whole team is.
And like I said, so many really good questions. I think I might end on talking about how the good, the bad, how to bring up kids in the mission field. A bunch of questions about family dynamics of kids overseas. Good, bad, ugly, just with very short amount of time. I apologize.
Your kids are your disciples as well. So don't sacrifice your children for the sake of the people over there. And I think be genuine, be real. Kids can sniff out hypocrisy from a very young age. So be real and let them know that they are a priority in your life. It was so wonderful because we had various people in leadership, some that really wanted to kind of squeeze out as much medical work of us as they could. And it was kind of a bother that we had so many kids there. And then there were others, particularly our African regional leader with Pioneers, who was a Ghanaian. He would come and he'd say, how are the kids doing? Are they okay? And that was like his main concern was our kids' well-being. And that really, if we ever got swayed by those that were saying, do more work, your kids are a nuisance, he really reset us and kept us in right perspective.
It's not easy to raise kids overseas. As I mentioned before, our two, Luke and Sarah, were the only English-speaking American kids that were there pretty much the whole time with consistency. But there are a million opportunities that our son ran around with the maintenance guy, so he learned plumbing and electrical things and all kinds of stuff. And Uncle Paul came to our son's high school graduation because he is that invested, almost more so, well, in many ways, than our son's grandfather. So don't underestimate all that your kids, the opportunities that they have to gain this world view perspective that is something that our kids now cherish. And I really like when you said, be honest with them. And so when the Lord called us back, I would tell the kids as we were packing up our things and deciding what we're going to take and what we're going to leave and give away and all that, we've never done this before. We've never done this before. And where you are today, you've never done this before, but bringing your kids into some of the age-appropriate decisions and being honest, we've never done this before. Do you want to bring this Christmas ornament or should we give it away? And that, I think, is really a healthy way to engage the children, whatever age they're in, and keep them positive, but also realistic about it.
Thank you, guys. So in maybe 2 minutes, I'm sorry, 2 minutes maybe, we're going to walk out the back, but I'm going to give Doug and Beth Ellen, you guys didn't get a chance to answer that, so I'm going to give you guys a chance to share your closing stories. Sorry, I'm not giving everyone a chance to share your closing stories, if you want. And then after that, I'll ask one of you guys to pray. And then after that, we are going to walk out the back to your chosen small group. So we're not going to walk out just yet. If you guys want to share stories.
I think, there's a balance as you're looking ahead and being aware of the hard that's out there and being realistic, but also not losing sight of the fact that if God calls you into healthcare missions, what an amazing adventure lies ahead. And what an amazing privilege to be entrusted with the skill set that allows you to minister to people in their hour of greatest need often, and where their hearts are open to hearing about Jesus, and to be a part of the great commission story against which the gates of hell shall not prevail. And it is an amazing privilege and adventure, and super exciting. But pace yourself.
I'm not going to share a story, but I feel like I need to say something to the single, since I'm the single on the panel. But I know there's more unmarried people in here than two. So, single women. I heard a lot before I went overseas that, you should really think about getting married before you go to the Muslim world, because it just doesn't make sense. It really makes sense. Some people have said that single women are the most effective missionaries in the Muslim world. There was a TL in my organization that's been on the field for years, and he wrote a line in an email that said, most of my best men are single women. And single men, I just want to encourage you to, if you want to get married, that's fine, but you don't, unless God put someone in your path who already has this calling at heart, don't wait, just go. There's thousands of us overseas. In all shapes and sizes and colors and personalities. Just be obedient and go, and you will have your pick of the litter. So.
Well said, well said. On that note, does someone want to pray and close us out? Thank you. I was saying thank you for your comment.
Thank you, God, for this day. Thank you that we get to come before your throne. Just a privilege that we're so grateful for. Thank you that we get to be a part of your kingdom. I pray that you would just increasingly impress on all our hearts the things that are important to you. Thank you that you love the nations. Thank you that you're aware of people in tiny villages, up in mountains, and in jungles that we don't even know about, that we don't think about, and you always do. And I pray for everybody in this room that you would speak to them, that you would lead them, and that you would give them just a great sense of peace and a trust that you have prepared good works for them, and you will be faithful and you will lead them, which is the same. Amen.
Thanks, Beth Ellen. If everyone could please join me in giving our panelists a round of applause.